Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathy C. I'm from New York and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater. Today's date is Wednesday, February 25th, 2026. Today we are reading from the Big Book. We are in There's a Solution. We are on page 21, which starts first paragraph, but what about the real alcoholics? Today's readers, we have the 12 Steps, Sarah G., 12 Traditions, Maura Z., Reader of the Text, Lynn F., page 164, Marge O. Our backup for today is Tricia D., our announcements, Kathy S., newcomer greeter, Devorah S., and our host, second hour host, is Ken W.H., and thank you all for your service in February. The reference numbers for yesterday, Tuesday, February 24th, for our 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 23,233. That's 23233. And for our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,234. That's 23234. Our OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Sarah G. to please read the 12 steps. Come on in, Sarah.
Hi, good morning. This is Sarah G. from New York. So grateful to be here. Thank you, everyone. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except what to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Sarah. I will now ask Maura Z. to come on in and please read the 12 traditions. Maura, please press star one.
Sorry about that. I got double muted.
Thank you,
Kathy, for your service. 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to do service, and I pass.
Thank you, Maura. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share in what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes, and I will be timing you. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, please let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study in the Big Book, wherein there is a solution. We are on page 21, the first paragraph. But what about the real alcoholic? To the end of that paragraph, once he starts to drink. I'm now going to ask Lynn F. to please come in and read for us. Come on in, Lynn.
Good morning, moderator. Good morning, fellows. This is Lynn F., recovered in Pennsylvania. But what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker, but at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. Thank you for the opportunity to read this paragraph and share my experience, strength, and hope. And when I look back over my career in food and other substances, I have experience that I can rely upon of being a moderate consumer of alcohol. Somewhere along the line, it didn't really matter to me if I drank or not, and I gave it up. One of the reasons was it didn't work for the Pay and Way program. But I could never give up the food. I could never give up the insanity that went with the food, and that just got worse. I'm really grateful for that experience of giving up alcohol because it helped me understand myself as a compulsive overeater. So for me, at some stage of my drinking career, I'm going to say some stage of my eating career, I lost all control of my food consumption. So I have experience of pain wave programs of all the different diet plans from, 12 when my mom first took me to a pain wave program up till the age of 42 when I found OA. And so for me, I was able to see that pattern, that growth in me, how things got worse. And before I did come into OA, I did not care at all. I had about 2 years of not even trying to stop eating. And that was probably the worst of my food career. And it wasn't until I came in to the room that I realized just how powerless I was. I didn't realize it until I started to work with other people that weren't alarmed by my story, that were capable of saying, that's me as well, and this is what works. So I encourage you to work this program. We are here for you, and God has us all. So that's what I've got. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Lynn, thank you so much for sharing, starting us off this morning. I'm now going to take a first lineup of names. If you'd like to share, please press *1 to unmute yourself. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you share it on either Monday or Tuesday, either meeting, we ask you to please hold back. Who'd like to start sharing with us this morning?
Melissa C.
Harlan G.
Harlan C.
Jennifer C. Jennifer C.
Sonny B.
Nancy R.
Okay, so far I have Melissa C., Harlan G., Tony B., Jennifer C., and Nancy R. I have those five. Did anyone else give out their name? Thank you,
A. Colorado.
Thank you, Pete. I heard somebody in Colorado.
Ben A. from Colorado.
I heard Lynn Jen?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay. I'll tell you my next lineup here. After Nancy R., I have Elena, Pete, Jen A., Christina L. from Florida, and someone before Christina from Florida. Was there somebody after Jen and before Christina with the C? Okie dokie, we'll pass on that. Oh, there you go. Okay. All right, this is a wonderful, wonderful lineup, and we're going to start off this morning with Melissa C., followed by Harlan G., and then Tony B. Melissa, please come in and share with us.
Hey, good morning, Kathy. Thanks so much for your service this morning. I'm Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York, and, when I read this, I'm just throwing my timer. I think about being the real compulsive overeater, and I don't know if I started off as moderate or went to hard, but I do know that I passed the point of being able to rein it in. And I have some really clear memories of times when I had been controlling my eating. I would be on a diet and then I would eat something off the diet and I could not get back on. Like it seemed like everyone around me could get, think about, about the time I was 14, I had lost a lot of weight. I had gotten myself very skinny, very skinny. And I remember coming home from school one day and I ate something and it was like a light switched and I could not stop. I gained 100 pounds in high school and I think it was because I lost all control of my food consumption once I started to drink. And I think and I've had that experience over and over again because I'm someone who was, I had lost and regained the weight a number of times in my life. But I think what was difficult for me, at least, was to identify what was my alcohol. You know, that became very important, because if I lose all control of my liquor consumption, of my alcohol consumption, of my alcoholic food consumption once I start to drink, I better know what it is that I can't drink. And, you know, and I did have to be someone who had to read the labels. That is my truth. I can't consume my alcohol if I'm going out to dinner. You know, I have to be as vigilant about not triggering the phenomenon of craving, you know, as someone with a peanut allergy. I have to take it with all the seriousness, because once I start, I cannot rein it back in. And I think about, you know, so many of my experiences that informed me of that. I think about, you know, I used to go on Weight Watchers, and I would starve, you know, the days leading up to the big weigh-in, and then I would get weighed in, leave the meeting, and go binge. And at some point, I couldn't get back on the plan in enough time so I could meet the scale the following week. At one time, I used to be able to, but I could not. Once I start, I cannot stop. And thanks for that. I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Next up, we have Harlan G, followed by Tony B. Come on, Harlan.
Thanks, Kathy, for your service. I'm Harlan G, and please don't be gentle with your reminder. I'm outdoors walking. I'm Harlan G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. I could regale you with stories about eating full boxes of cookies and eating all this food when I was younger, but that's not going to help us right now, because we hear that every day. What I want to do is make the distinction that because I am a real alcoholic eater, a compulsive overeater, and we say that all the time, hi, I'm Harlan, I'm a compulsive overeater, not so you'll know, but so I'll know. But there's nothing in this world that is going to help me. It says on page 43 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Now, I've never had a spiritual experience, but I've had many spiritual awakenings. Only the power of God can help me get through today without destroying myself and those around me with food. And I have to live in a world where I have to remember that abstinence alone will not treat this disease. I've lost hundreds of pounds in my life. And a man of 30 in the next chapter, he remained bone dry for 25 years. He picked up his slippers and a bottle. He was dead within 4 years. Going to 3 meetings a week and making 3 outreach calls a day will not treat this disease. It's a healthy part of it, yes. I'm not knocking abstinence. Don't come away from this thinking, I said you don't have to be abstinent. I never said that. What I am saying, to be clear, is abstinence alone in and of itself, weight loss in and of itself, does not treat the disease of compulsive overeating. Going to 3 meetings a week and sticking with the meeting makers that make it will not treat this disease. The key for me to remember when I read this paragraph is that he says that if I'm a heavy eater or a moderate eater, there's a way out. There is no way out from compulsive overeating except through a spiritual experience or spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. That's it. There's no alternative ending to the story other than death. A spiritual experience is fast. A spiritual awakening is slow. I am a compulsive overeater, and that means I need the help of a power greater than myself. And
that's
I get that power through the word, thank you, through the working of the steps, not through any other method. Thank you very much, Kathy, for your service, and I will pass with that. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was Harlan G. from Arizona. Next up, we have Tony B. from Scotland, followed by Jennifer C. And before Tony comes in, if you came in after we started, we are on page 21, the first paragraph. Come on in, Tony, and please share with us.
Thank you, Kathy. My name's Tony B. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater living in Scotland. Thank you very much for your service and everybody. I was just thinking about another one's story. Say, look at Bill. So he had periods of moderation. You can see it in his story. He had periods of hope, periods of sobriety, and they're like my dieting. But this loss of control is something that happens once I start to drink. The allergy is set off. I might be able to stop, but the allergy will always get started again when I start to, when I put any alcoholic food in my body. So I know this is not what this paragraph's talking about, but most important is working out how not to start again, and that is mental. But here we're talking about this losing all control of my consumption when I start. And I was just thinking there back on my history. And from when I was a little child, you know, there'd be grated cheese, for example, on the table before we were having spaghetti bolognese or something for dinner. We were going to be sprinkling that on. And I would be back and back to that, rolling up the balls, eating it. And that itchy, scratchy allergy, I remember it so well. And I can still think of it, that feeling of having ingested something that is triggering my allergy. Or sitting opposite a school, you know, a young kind of kindergarten school friend, eating crumbed breast of chicken at a friend's house and looking. Started that allergy in me, and I want so much more than I've got on my plate. I've just got one piece, and I look over and she's eating more slowly than me, and I want it. The allergy has been triggered. And you know, for social reasons in my youth, I didn't want to be fat, and also I started drinking and smoking, which kind of took over. But you know, I was able to kind of control. But there's no doubt in my mind that this allergy was going on from the beginning. But I could moderate when I wanted. I wanted to be slim. I could control and manage. But I would always return again because of the mental side of it. I would always go back to it. And so I think that's all I have to share. Thank you for letting me share, and I look forward to hearing the others. Love you all, and have a lovely day. I pass.
Thank you so much, Tony. That's Tony B. from Scotland. Next up, we have Jennifer C., followed by Nancy R., then Elena C. Come on in, Jennifer.
Hey, good morning. This is Jennifer C., recovered in South Carolina. May I be heard?
We hear you well.
Thanks, honey. What about the real alcoholic? This reminds me of one of the, in my opinion, most important paragraphs in this book that tells me, first paragraph of more about alcoholism on page 30, it says that the first step, the very first step of my recovery is that I have to fully concede to my innermost self, not get another assignment done, not listen to another podcast, not make another phone call, not go to another meeting. I have to fully concede to my innermost self, not to my sponsor. Yes, I'm done. I promise I'm done. I'm done. I promise I'm done. To my innermost self, deep inside of Jennifer, I have to fully concede that I am the real deal, that I am going down. That step one doesn't mean I'm done. It means I'm going to do it again. It means it doesn't matter how bad my last binge was, I'm going to do it again. That's what step one means to me. It means that if I don't get this psychic change, if I don't get this spiritual awakening, if I don't get rescued from a power greater than me, God, I am going to die in this disease. And then I learned what it means to be a real alcoholic. I learned what that means. And one of the things it means is that I don't want to believe I'm a real alcoholic. I want to prove to myself and to you that I can eat like other people, that I can have an RX bar one more time, that I can, you know, eat a little bit more one more time and it's not going to hurt me. I'm going to try to prove myself the exception over and over and over again. I'm going to pick up over and over and over and over and over again to try to prove that I can eat like a normal lady. It also tells me that I have this allergy that once that process is set in motion, it's like a car without brakes. I have no control over how long it's going to last, maybe a day, maybe a couple hours, maybe a couple of days, maybe a week. And then it tells me that because I'm able to stop sometimes and quote unquote get back on track, this disease is going to convince me that I can keep getting back on track. It's okay, because remember last time you got back on track? So you're going to get back on track again. So what's another couple days of a binge, right? The problem with that is it's an illusion, because back on track actually means that I'm in relapse. I will get back on track. And then I'll get back off track. And then I'll get back on, and then I'll get back off, and that'll last until I get this psychic change. And so there's all these characteristics of what it means to be a real alcoholic, and this book is teaching me, but ultimately the most important one is that I need divine help. Only God can save me, and once he does, I am then able to help the other compulsive overeater like my life depends on it. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much. That was Jennifer C. from South Carolina. Next up, we have Nancy R., followed by Elena C., then Pete B. Nancy, come on in and share with us, please.
Good morning. This is Nancy R., compulsive overeater from Illinois. Just wanting to claim my seat this morning and be a part of. And I am definitely a real compulsive overeater. And my only solution is a spiritual awakening, spiritual awareness, spiritual experience, that I continue to connect with. As I continue to connect with, I get the freedom that this solution offers. I am truly powerless over my addiction of compulsive overeating. And it is only through my relationship with my higher power and that higher power's grace and me doing the work to show up, to follow a higher power's will instead of my will, that I get the relief that I have for today. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was Nancy R. from Illinois. And next up, we have Elena C. And before Elena comes on, just want to remind everyone we are on page 21, the first paragraph, but what about the real alcoholic? Elena, please come in and share with us, followed by Pete B.
Good morning. May I be heard?
We hear you well, Elena. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Elena C. from South Carolina, gratefully recovered compulsive overeater for today. And this paragraph describes my condition to the letter. So I did not become an addict until later in life. I always had a sweet tooth. And, you know, when I was young, I could have eaten moderately. I was able to eat moderately. And then, you know, the older I got, I was a hard eater. And, you know, finally at one point, I totally lost control over my eating sweets and chocolates and cake. And, you know, it was just crazy. I just did not have an explanation why that is. Nobody in my family had that condition, although there's alcoholism in my family. There's addiction is in my family, left and right. Not compulsive overeating. To my knowledge, I'm the only one. And I didn't understand it. I just had no idea why I can't stop. I totally lost control. And until, you know, I came into this rooms and I got to read doctor's opinion, and I understood that it's the allergy of the body and along with the obsession of the mind. Because the thing is, I lost control over my life as well. I lost control over my relationship as well. I lost control over many things at that time. You know, I remember I was fighting with family members. There were episodes where I couldn't self-regulate. And it's so beautiful now that I'm much calmer. I have compassion for people. And that's because, you know, I put God at the center of my universe for the most part, not all the time, because I forget, I have a memory problem. And I do that. And when I can do that, you know, there's so many things that I get, value that I get from this connection. You know, and I told one of my clients yesterday, which we talked about, like, why it's good to feel remorseful. I actually told her how I was and how, you know, I'm not doing that anymore. And I want to stay this way. I want to be, you know, the change that I want to see in the world. I want people to remember me when I die that I was a good person with God. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was Elena C. from South Carolina. Next up, we have Pete B., followed by Jen A. Come on in, Pete.
Thanks, moderator, for taking the meeting. Doing a great job. And my name's Pete B. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy in Pennsylvania. A lot of really good stuff this morning, right? A lot of real good things. You know, it's interesting. You can't concede something. You can't concede to something unless you understand what it is, right? We have to understand what it is. And, you know, if you read the description of the hard drinker, the hard eater, that description aligns to what the definition of addiction is. Right? I'm physically or mentally dependent upon a substance or a behavior that if I stop causes a problem, causes withdrawal. That's the definition. Right? Addiction, that may be the reason why I start to eat. Just like the buildup of emotions may be the reason why I start to eat, or the fact that I wasn't loved enough when I was little or loved too much when I was little. All the millions of reasons why somebody starts to eat. But what this is saying here, the thing that differentiates the real alcoholic from the hard eater or food addict or even the moderate drinker or moderate eater, the one thing, not multiple things, is that we lose control after we start, right? The problem is not before. It's what happens after. And until I could get that into my mind, there was no way I was going to get any kind of relief, because in the doctor's opinion, it says that the only relief that we get is through entire abstinence. So like it was shared earlier, I have to understand what it is that triggers the allergy. Otherwise, I'll never get any relief. It may be intermittent, it may be temporary, but I'll never get any relief. Right? So we want to concede things. Yeah, I have no problem with addiction. I'm addicted to non-alcoholic foods. I'm addicted to meditation. I'm addicted to coffee. Doesn't bother me. Doesn't trigger the phenomenon of craving. Right? So we have to understand what the problem is. The problem is alcoholism, compulsive overeating. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much. That is Pete B. from Pennsylvania. And we now have Jen A. coming in. And after Jen, we have Kathy S., then Christina L., and we do have time for a few more shares after Christina. We are on page 21, the first paragraph. Jen, please come in and share with us.
Thank you so much, Kathy. Thanks for hearing me way out here in Colorado this morning. I appreciate you. My name is Jen A., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, anorexic bulimic, and exercise bulimic. And I'm the real deal. I'm grateful to be in a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous this morning, surrounded by my peers and my friends, by my big book sponsors, and by those who have shared this morning. Because if I hadn't gotten here, I would surely be dead like my friend Dana. In 2014, she was found on the floor of her home, surrounded by gobs of jewelry, beautiful clothing, luxurious cars, and a home on the golf course here in Colorado. She was one of my best friends, and she was 5'9", and she was all of probably 70 pounds dripping wet. She led a lavish life, and life was good, but she was dying on the inside. And little did I know that God would use my friend Dana to bring me here to Overeaters Anonymous. It wasn't her memorial service that brought me here, but it was just the message that once she started doing something, she couldn't stop. And she couldn't stop from starting doing that. And that's the eating, the vomiting, the restricting. And she did it over and over again. And when I finally identified in and heard from her husband about, the Ziploc baggies full of vomit that he found throughout the house, and he was just, in tears, I was like, wow, he's talking about me. It's, we come on these lines to identify in or identify out. Identify out, go try it your own way again and see what happens. Everybody has to take, like my friend says, a beautiful bite over and over again before they're convinced. I came to these rooms. I wasn't convinced at first, but I began to become convinced as I read the black and white text on these pages. So, am I the real compulsive overeater? Absolutely. Am I the real anorexic bulimic? Absolutely. The real exercise bulimic? You better believe it. And do I lose all control once I start? Absolutely, I do. So I identify in, I belong here, and I'm glad that I came. I'm glad that you folks took my hand and helped me and guided me and have been with me every step of the way and have never left my side. So if you're new this morning, welcome to Overeaters Anonymous. And like it's so beautifully said on this meeting, welcome home. If you think you can moderate and you can avoid the extremes, me too. I was that girl too. But eventually I had to give up, wave the white flag, and surrender everything over to a power greater than myself and take these steps and then live in them today. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much. That's Jen A. from Colorado. Next up, we have Kathy S., followed by Christina L. Come on in, Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy. This is Kathy S., recovered compulsive overeater in Georgia, the real compulsive overeater. And, yeah, I relate to all the shares and definitely this text. This paragraph is really important for me because my disease will use the idea that, way back when you were able to have a ham sandwich and a Debbie Brownie and Doritos and you didn't binge, that was when I was in elementary school. But I was very possessive about that brownie now. I had a friend that tried to take a bite all the time and I hated her for it, And this is the point. The paragraph goes on, there was a stage when I was moderate or even hard with food and exercise and dieting and those kinds of things. But I was not in the rooms of OA at that time. I didn't come in here until I was at that stage, that but at some stage of my eating career, I lost all control. And I didn't know what was going on. I didn't understand it. I just knew it was dangerous and it wasn't working. It was terrifying. And that's the thing about this disease. You know, we don't come back from it. Once I crossed that line into this stage of losing control, it's been my experience in 15 years of it, I cannot regain that control. And another word that stands out here is career. It did become a career, all of it. I mean, career takes a lot of time, energy, and focus. And if that doesn't describe how I thought about food and exercise and dieting, I mean, the whole gamut. It was just, that's what I did and made a whole career out of it. And as a stay-at-home mom, so there was my career. And it was miserable. And now today, my career is recovery. It's showing up. It's living spiritual principles and having a life today that is beyond my wildest dreams. And I'm so grateful for abstinence. I'm grateful for learning what I learned. I'm grateful for this fellowship where folks shared my story and I could relate in. And I'm grateful just for the 12 steps, for God, and for being here. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Kathy S. from Georgia. Next up, we have Christina L. And after Christina, we'll be able to take a few more names. We are on page 51. There is a solution. We're in the first paragraph. So after Christina, if you haven't shared on either Monday or Tuesday of either meeting, please come share with us. Come on in, Christina.
Good morning. Thanks so much for your service, Kathy. This is Christina L., recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. And I have real alcoholic circled, underlined, written me with exclamation marks pointing to it in this book. But guess what? It did not keep me abstinent. And I had written next to it, I need to know who I am. And even that, I could not stay stopped. Don't know that I was a real alcoholic or a compulsive overeater when I was born. I don't know when the switch happened when I turned into a pickle. But I know at some point, and I'm guessing somewhere in my mid to late 30s, it happened. And I kept trying to prove myself, like everybody else was sharing this morning, an exception to the rule, not a compulsive overeater. And what I realized is that what I realized was that I was believing that it was a moral failure by being a compulsive overeater. I could not accept that I had this because I believed that there was something morally wrong with me by having it, that there was something that I had done that made me this way. And I kept trying to try methods to, I could not accept who I was. And the thing that I wrote below this last year when I came back from relapse, when I was going through this chapter with my sponsor was, I need to know who I am, but more importantly, I need to accept who I am. And that has been something that I have been focusing on this last year since coming back. Page 416 in the story, Acceptance Was the Answer, there's a paragraph that I was reading at some point last year. I don't even remember when, but I made it a point of reading that paragraph every single day for a while, just trying to let it sink into my brain that I do not have a moral issue. I am a compulsive overeater. I have a disease, and there's nothing that I can do about it to make it go away. I just have to accept who I am And then in the next paragraph on 417, like, no, I did not give permission. I do not want to be a compulsive overeater, but I am. And again, nothing is going to change the way that I am. All I can do is accept it. And when I accept it, the resistance falls away, and I'm able to be at peace with who I am today and with just continue to do what I need to do to continue to grow, learn, and change into the recovered woman that God has created me to be. And there's a quote that's come into my mind, and I can't remember who says it. I think it's a saint, actually, and she says, be who you are, and you will set the world on fire. And with that, I pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Christina L. from Florida. We do have time for 3 more shares. If anyone would like to share, please press star 1.
Jerry K.
Julianne. Okay, I heard Larry K. and someone from Minnesota.
Okay.
Joe M. Okay, so let's go with Larry. Okay, Nancy, I'm going to put you down. Let's see how it goes with the first 3. We have Larry K., CK, Joe M. Come on in, Larry.
Good morning, Kathy. Thanks so much for your service. I'm Larry K., recovered from Chicago. You know, we read this morning about the real alcoholic in the big book. And, of course, as we've heard, this refers to someone with a fully established, uncontrollable physical compulsion to drink, to, in our case, to eat our alcoholic foods. It makes them unable to stop through willpower alone. You know that people come here to Vision for You, to OA, but certainly Vision, by the hundreds? They do.
Mm-hmm.
They test the waters. They come by the hundreds. The problem is they leave by the 99s. We think that this is it's a good message overall. We stick in the big book. Why do they leave by the 99s? And they do. Why is that? And I would suggest to you that that's because they're not getting well. They are not getting well. Now, I'm not blaming anyone for them not getting well. I'm just saying that I'll tell you something. Not getting well is a powerful deterrent to staying. If you're not getting well here, you're not going to be around for long. You may be disciplined. You may be around here for a while, but it's a deterrent. If you continue day after day after day to not get well, eventually you're going to question whether this is nonsense. You know, there were hundreds in New Jersey not long ago. We were together in fellowship. It was lovely. It was beautiful. A lot of those people are back in the disease. I know that. That's why it's so critical that we understand who we are, and we're hearing about who we are, what the real alcoholic is, and as it's been stated, if you are, because you diagnose yourself. I don't diagnose you. Nobody else does. If you are, only a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening will be sufficient to pull your ass from the quicksand. You know, that's it. That's the deal. That's why this paragraph is so critical. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you so much. That's Larry K. from Illinois. Next up, we have CK, followed by Joe M. Come on in, CK.
Peace, family. This is CK in California. Today is day 500 for me. I'm so grateful. And I'm a real Bill. In active addiction, Bill drank oceans and oceans of alcohol, and I ate mounds and mounds of food. In recovery, Bill turns his attention to others, and I'm trying to be just like Bill in recovery. But when I'm in active addiction, it's impossible for me to do anything moderately. In active addiction, everything is hard because I'm controlled by self-centered fear. And page 76 in the AA 12 and 12 tells me that self-centered fear activates all my other character defects. When I trigger my allergy by ingesting ingredients that I need to stay away from, or by digesting people that I need to stay away from, I trigger a destructive spree and become consumed by my addictions. And once this deadly cycle is started, I lose all control. Then out come the character defects, and you get introduced to my evil Gemini twin, a.k.a. Mr. Hyde. When I'm controlled by my character defects, everything is extreme. Everything is intense. Everything is hard. I eat hard. I love hard. I play hard. I push hard. I tornado hard. But I'm so grateful that there's a solution, and I don't have to keep doing everything the hard way. The solution starts with surrender. I surrendered and admitted that there's a hole in my soul, and I keep filling it up with food, people, places, and things. I surrendered and gave up trying to do everything by myself. Please meet. I surrendered and gave up trying to do everything by myself and started accepting help from a power greater than myself. I surrendered and started working the program of recovery that's outlined in this amazing big book. Yes, we have 1,000 fellowships, and 1,000 fellowships produce millions of fellows and thousands of pieces of literature, but there's only one program, and it works for any addiction. So when I surrendered the CK program and I worked the one and only program of recovery, I experienced moderation. I experienced neutrality. I experienced peace throughout my entire body. Why? Because I'm working the steps and taking the outlines that are outlined in the book. This is a program of action. It is not a program of magic. For years, I was sitting around in meetings. Yes, I was doing some service in those meetings. Yes, I thought I believed in God, but I wasn't getting well because I wasn't doing the work. And the program taught me that faith without works is dead. I have to take action and keep taking action every single day, because the moment I stop addressing my spirituality and think I can rest on some laurels, I'm headed for trouble. And that's a trip back to active addiction. And yes, your girl loves to travel, but today I'm trying to avoid that vacation back to hell by doing the work. And because I'm trying to avoid that vacation back to hell, because I don't know when that trip will ever end. So just for today, I'm so grateful for recovery. Thanks for letting me share, y'all.
Thank you so much. That was CK from California. Next up, we have Joe M. Come on in, Joe.
Yeah, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
We hear you well.
Okay, thank you very much for your service. My name is Joe. I'm a compulsive overeater. He begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. The word all really stands out to me today. All. I mean, it's a radical thing. I begin to lose all control of my eating once I start to overeat. All. Total. I have zero control. It's a radical thing to admit. Because for me, what that means is I can't take a single extra bite even of my abstinence food. Because one of my triggers is volume. Because I've got the substances of the sugar, the flour, the saturated fat, the salt, all those, but also volume. So I am in a world now where I am very contained in the amount even of abstinence food that I'm eating. And all of the things that I do for my abstinence aren't because I'm trying to control food. I do all the things that I do for my abstinence because I have no control over the food. Like, where am I coming from? You know, am I coming from a desire to control or manage? Or am I coming from a place of, I don't have any control? Some people will misperceive the things that I do as attempts at management. But step one says, I don't have any management. So once I admit that my life is unmanageable, in this case around food, I'm surrendered, which means I'm going to take all this action to stay within that abstinent food plan. It's a radical act to say, oh my God, I can't even take a fingerful of X or a little thimbleful of Y, because I am the real compulsive overeater. I am not a moderate eater. I am not a hard eater. I was never a hard eater. I went from moderate eater to compulsive overeating at a young age, and I passed through that stage. And by the time I was 8 years old, the compulsive overeating had set in. And so it's a radical and sometimes painful thing to admit that I'm in this group. This is the group I'm in. I'm not in the other groups. There's the classification, and I'm in this class. But that is a most freeing thing. One of the most freeing things I've ever done is to admit who I am. Thank you for letting me share, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much. That was Joe M. from Minnesota. And Nancy, I'm sorry we're out of time, and I want to thank everyone who shared this morning. And please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediate following this meeting. Share ID for today, Wednesday, February 25th, 2026, is 23,236. That is 23236. We're now going to close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Marge O. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Come on in, Marge.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I'm Marge O. from Massachusetts, gratefully recovered and happy to do service. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only have a little. We only know a little. Sorry. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something that you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find, and you and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as we trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you.